Yeah.
Sure. You're listening to the podcast with a cave from Casterbridge.co.uk with me, James McLean and Brian Turnover. My name is Christian Colley, and we are here to discuss Revolution of the Daleks, the January the 1st, 2021 New Year's Day special of Doctor Who, in which Daleks return en masse, as do various... do you know what? I'm going to ramble. This is what happened. You all know what happened, and I really enjoyed it, to be honest with you. Apart from a bit in the middle, which was very exposition-heavy and a bit slow and talky, we could probably wrap it up now. I loved it, to be honest. I thought it was really good.
Okay. End of the podcast.
Cue the music.
But there's Daleks. There's a long Dalek. Quick recap. That Dalek from Resolution of the Daleks 3 years ago, 2 years ago, whenever it was. No one knows what time is anymore, but thanks to coronavirus. Time is just a thing that we used to have. There was this Dalek. What was left of it was taken away by that bloke who's based on Donald Trump. And he has a scientist develop a load of security drones out of it. But that guy who created the security zones, drones, also found some DNA. So he cloned the DNA and accidentally created an entire tower full of Dalek mutants. And then the doctor sorted it out. But no, it was good, wasn't it? Wasn't it? Was it just me? Were my expectations set too low?
No, I'm with you. I actually thought they had a pretty good story here, and I was glad to see that. I especially too, watching the trailers and seeing the new design of the Daleks and so on, I was like, oh my God, are they really like moving forward? This is the new design, because I'll be honest, whenever we get a little too different on the Daleks, they don't feel Dalek-y to me. But this made sense. They made this make sense and work, and I felt the story was good. I thought there were some like points in the story and some bits of dialogue and so on that still kind of, you know, I wish weren't there. But on the whole, I thought it was a good story, and I thought they did a good job of making that, I forget, Robertson, as it was his name, making that character a bit more relevant and interesting this time around.
Yeah, I liked it. I sat and I watched it and I enjoyed it. I don't think it was without, from my perspective, issues. Mm-hmm. But it felt to me like, again, perhaps going back to 2005 to 2009, it felt a bit old school in its approach. There were issues there for me, though, sort of, again, structural issues which confused me. And things were, yeah, I kind of like that Robertson character, if that's his name, because I can't remember. We'll call him Robertson.
It is.
Regardless. It is. Okay, cool. I kind of felt my biggest issue with it is it's an issue that I'm trying to think who was saying it with me, and I was kind of agreeing that, you know, a bit like, so like you have things like The Mandalorian now are quite punchy. And I kind of feel that Doctor Who could be a little more punchier, and it has the ability to do so, and it doesn't. And we have this sort of very long, almost like New Adventures preamble of how the Dalek was transported. And I kind of felt like we just didn't need it. And the prison felt like a dead end too, which was only really there so we could have this suggestion of 2 decades of her thinking about stuff. But ultimately, the idea as a cliffhanger was more interesting than the outcome that we got, which was just a place for her to have thinkings until she's rescued. And it just all felt like we could have just got rid of 20 minutes and you could have had her in her thinking place, wherever she's had to go and think about some of these big revelations which has stirred her brain as much as fandom. And then have Jack come and get her and bring her to Earth because there's drones being used that look like Daleks. And then we find out the backstory through that. And in that way, as much as I agree with Brian that Robertson's character was far better handled in this for me and was well done, and I thought handled the lines really well, you could take him out of that story and it wouldn't change that much. You didn't really need him in there. And the story would have flowed and be more punchy without all of his machinations and plannings and going to the Daleks with his telling them what's going on and turncoating the situation. It just felt really like redundant.
He's probably more Lex Luthor than Donald Trump, though, isn't he?
Certainly in this one he was, yes. He's now, obviously, before he was parodying the politicians, the politicians of the time, not just Trump, but across the world. And now you're sort of parodying the more common commercial, capitalist. I just kind of felt like we just didn't need it. And it was fine watching it. I didn't find it boring. I just kind of feel from watching it and thinking, it's been a while since we've seen Doctor Who. I think audiences just wanted to get into something. They wanted to see the Doctor. They wanted to get into an adventure. And we have 20 minutes before she even gets out. And it's like, it just kind of felt like we just didn't need it. We just didn't need it. What was interesting came after it. Yeah. Or was more interesting. And I like the new Dalek design, actually. I was quite sold through the episode. I was like, and I agree with Brian. I thought they used it. They brought the excuse of using it in well. But I kind of liked it as a design. I'd be happy to see them again. I like the tonality to their voice as well. That was the slight shift there. Mm-hmm. I thought that was cool. But the main story just felt like it was a little wedged in because we'd had, again, as Doctor often does, this long preamble thing, which just means you don't have space to deal with the meat of it. And I'd like to see more of that meat and then perhaps more conversations with the characters, more space for that. Because when they had those conversations, I liked them. I liked the conversation between Yaz and Jack. I liked the conversation between Ryan and the Doctor. There was all that sort of stuff was good.
I do agree with you. I feel like the whole prison aspect was kind of a bit of a letdown because it looked like at the end of last season, it looked like, okay, this might be interesting. Is this Shada? Are we getting an interesting story here? And then instead it was used, like you said, not so much in my mind for the Doctor to contemplate, but obviously it was. It was used as a reason why the Doctor was gone so long from her friends. And it was just kind of like, okay, but I've never really seen a story where the Doctor got put in some kind of prison that the Doctor couldn't have eventually found a way out. And to have Jack come in and do something that she couldn't have done for 20 years was kind of like, okay, I don't know. It seems like the prison was just basically, how can we occupy the Doctor for a little while we focus on the companions?
I suppose the argument would have been maybe that because she wasn't sure who she was anymore, that she was now able to do what she would be able to do. Perhaps that would be I don't know. And I suppose I'll just break in there. One, the other thing that did annoy me with this episode, which I think actually my mother brought up, which I thought was a fair point, is that, and it irritated me, I just hadn't thought about it, is that she comes back and they go, where have you been? She says, I've been in prison. And they've been like, well, it's been 10 months. Mm-hmm. And she has to go, oh, I'm really sorry. And it's like, well, one, she was taken. She didn't decide to go to prison. Two, she's been there for 20 years.
Yeah.
And you've just had 10 months of being with your friends. Maybe to some degree that could respond to discourses around lockdowns and everything. But it just kind of felt to me like that seemed unreasonable, almost like there'd been a rewrite or there'd been something that had been written in there which had been altered and didn't quite, there was a dissonance. Because I don't understand why she was apologizing. Because if she'd actually gone off like David Tennant had done the Doctor had done at the end of Water of Mars to the End of Time and had to spend some time away to contemplate their stuff and then come back and then realize 10 months had passed and it being them indulging in their own need to just think things through, I could understand that apology. But because they set it up that person had been imprisoned, I don't see why they had to apologize for being imprisoned for 20 years. And that seemed like a really weird, almost like, when you have those sort of dramatic fallacies where you create a situation which doesn't really respond to the facts. And she having to apologize over being imprisoned and never actually say, well, actually, again, I know you're upset, but I didn't actually want to be there. I was stuck there for 20 years, And that would have been an obvious response, not in a nasty way, but just to sort of elevate some of the tension. I don't want you, you shouldn't feel too bad because it wasn't my choice. I was trapped. I needed to be rescued. I'm only here because I was rescued. And that never comes up. It just felt like a very false dramatic tension to me.
There's that. And then, you know, what would have been more interesting would have been to not have her have been in prison and to have her just stick true to her character. What we saw for previous for the previous two seasons of Jodi, where, you know, pretty much every adventure, she sends the companions off to do something and then she goes and finds new temporary companions per episode. Would have made much more sense for her to just be off gallivanting the universe with a new companion and pop back like, hey, I'm back here to pick you guys up, because that's what the new series does anymore. You know, ever since pretty much the Moffat era, the companions don't travel with the Doctor. They go to their home and get picked up on weekends. And then it would have made sense like, yo, you were supposed to be here next weekend. It's been 10 months. What's going on? And then it would have been more in character. They didn't really need the Doctor to be in prison to have her like come back and kind of be an after, have her friends be an afterthought kind of thing. Go ahead.
I was just gonna say, even if she went away and did all the things you said, because she couldn't cope with being the Doctor at that time, because she was now questioning who she was, so she goes off and meets other people, has other adventures, kind of in a way of trying to almost like the you know, the 10th Doctor, almost rejecting destiny, rejecting. And then coming back and then having to apologize for that sort of indulgence, that would make sense as well. And that same sort of logic. But yeah,
Were other contradictions in the episode as well, because you have Ryan saying, you know, oh, I've got to stay. I've got to be here for my mates. You know, I got to stay for my friends. And then Graham decides to stay with him. But at the end of the episode, Ryan's like, yo, there's all these things going on in like Singapore or whatever and all this other stuff. Why don't we travel the world? You know, these things can get us anywhere. And it's like, okay, so your friends don't matter anymore. You know, you're okay. Traveling, you know, Singapore is actually no different than traveling to an alien planet. You're still not with your friends.
Maybe you don't take them with him.
Those are the things that kind of really bugged me kind of stuff.
And Den of Geek brought up, I was reading their review of the episode, and there was a very nice bit they put in there, which I noticed too. But I hadn't articulated my brain, so I have to shout out to them for this, was that bit where they actually go and confront Robertson, and he tells them to go away, and they go away. And it was kind of like this whole idea that they were going to be on Earth fighting off all these evils wasn't really set up very well in this episode. They would be any good at it. Psychic paper will get you into a place. It won't stop you being shot or told to get out. So there was that kind of oddness to the episode too, that it didn't really give you a feeling that they would be able to do much on Earth. They might be just better being on the moors,
riding a bike.
Which again,
does the psychic paper actually does it? Mum, has she actually, you know, sent them to their deaths by giving them psychic paper?
Well, there's that as well. Yeah, just to finish that point though, that my mum pointed out, which again is another point, is that to actually, if you're trying to learn to cycle, cycling on grass is really hard. Again, good point. Why do they keep going to the hardest place seeking to cycle? I mean, I suppose it's because they think that grass is a softer fall. But as we know, if you fall off your bike, there's no real softer fall at that speed anyway. But yeah.
On a cliff as well.
Yeah.
Grass on a cliff.
Yeah, on a cliff.
But yeah, you know, psychic paper, wandering into a facility with psychic paper, get out. No, I've got psychic paper. Now, what's going on here? Bang, bang, you're dead. And she's given them the psychic paper. They wouldn't have had the agency to go and do that without the psychic paper. I think it's really irresponsible of the Doctor.
Then you get that a lot with the Doctor, don't you? I mean, going back to the Series 1 chat we had, you know, with 2005, and you see him taking Rose everywhere, and you see what it's doing to the mother, and you just think, God, really? I know you're trying to protect her and you do this big thing of sending her back and parting of the ways, but really, responsibility isn't always there. But the psychic paper thing was weird. And I assume it's biometrically linked to them, because otherwise you're giving a really big bit of technology to two people who aren't exactly that professional. I don't know. So on the whole, all those criticisms aside, I did enjoy it. It was fun. It wasn't particularly quite predictable.
Yeah, it wasn't groundbreaking, but it was fun.
But I still enjoyed it. Yeah. There was a lot of stuff going on. The dialogue was fine. I enjoyed seeing Captain Jack again. I thought John Barrowman was back to being himself, and I thought he worked well with Jodie Whittaker. I thought he worked well with Yaz. I thought Bradley Walsh seemed to be absent for a lot of it, which was kind of odd. One wonders whether maybe Bradley's got so many things on the go, maybe too much, and maybe that's why he's leaving, because he is a busy man. maybe this was just one thing too many things, and he just didn't seem to be much in the episode until the end. Certainly for dialogue.
Blank or blank.
Which seemed to rely a lot on Yaz and Ryan.
Well, regarding the dialogue, I will say that there were certain bits of dialogue that I did not enjoy. One of them being Captain Jack. You know, I'm Captain Jack Harkness and I'm immortal. Okay, thanks. Because your mates there aren't.
I'll tell you what, there was a lot
of... The Daleks were about to kill you all.
Yeah, there was a lot of Captain Jack exposition, but he managed to kind of smooth over the bit where he killed his grandson.
Right.
Yeah, I think that Torchwood is largely forgotten for those sort of things.
And it's fine. It was nice seeing Jack back again. I did think that he was well handled. I did think that, it, you know, it well used for the most part. But there were, you know, and like we all keep saying, the story was good. Like we've all said for years kind of thing, you know, there are eras of Doctor Who that you gravitate toward that like are your era. And then there are the other eras where, you know, have good stories, but maybe we're not completely enthralled with the whole of it, you know, kind of thing. And I hate to name check Colin Baker, but, you know, in fairness, there's when I watch his era, I realize I watch like two, maybe three episodes, but I largely don't really rewatch the rest.
Yes, I mean,
because it's those two, three episodes that are worth it. That's where the good writing happened. And I feel that's what happened here. This is a story of this era, much like in the Moff era, where I was actually surprised that Twice Upon a Time was a story that I was like, you know what, I will watch this. And Day of the Doctor, I will watch this. This one was good, but there were still some kind of issues in there and things. And I'm still not sold on this whole Ruth storyline and a doctor before the doctor, before the William Hartnell doctor, or the fact that the doctor is not really born on Gallifrey thing. I'm really hoping there's a story there that kind of becomes a master plan rather than a reality, because they don't sit well with me. It just doesn't work for me, kind of thing. But that's where my issue was. There were like dialogue bits about that that were kind of still reminding us about that and so on. But largely on the whole, the story worked. I do want to say again that we keep saying with this is that the cinematography was really amazing. The way, like the color grading, everything in this really did make the episode look great. I do think, like James did, that this Dalek design did look nice in this story. As a future going forward Dalek design, no, I'm not that keen on it, but I was surprised it looked way better than it did when it was like the junkyard Dalek. Yeah. There's one other thing that I was going to say. Oh, what's his name? Nathan. I can't remember his full name now, but the guy from Misfits. The guy who the Dalek took over. I kept looking at him going,
Leo.
This is the guy from Misfits, isn't
he?
Yeah, and man, he was good. He was very different from his Misfits counterpart, because I kept staring at him the whole time going, I swear that's him from Misfits. I swear that's him. And finally had to like look it up to confirm it, that it was him. But I was just like, dude, he looks a little bit different to himself, but also the acting and the way the story was told, he did a really good job. He was a good character.
I mean, I would like to see these Daleks again. I'm not sure whether I want to see them as the evolved design. I would really still love to see them do a classic Dalek as a in a new series way. And when I say that, I don't mean with rivets. I'd like to see a nice, clean version of the classic Dalek, which doesn't look delicate, shall we say. Something that has a sturdiness. And I think that just comes down to, again, materials. And so you're doing the same thing, essentially. Maybe you're softening out some of the hardnesses in the old style, in the old design, which are just there because of production purposes. So it's maybe sort of more, I don't want to say Art Deco, but the lines are sort of more in keeping with itself, which some of this new Dalek was trying to do.
Yeah.
But the shape is like the old one. I'd like to see that, something which is like a really, sort of like the Marvel movies do with comic stuff, where it's the same thing, but just made to feel like it could exist in a more sturdy. So that would be good.
We talked about this a few episodes ago, didn't we, about the Dalek specifically? And I do feel they did still look a bit flimsy.
Yeah.
They don't have the bulk of the main Daleks. The slimness makes them look more easier to tip over, for instance.
Well,
I think
yeah,
we mentioned that. So I would be very surprised if they did go with them going forward. But they've clearly built a few of them, so I dare say we're going to see them again. At least for budgetary reasons.
I could definitely say that some of them survived for sure, even though the Daleks seem pretty convinced that only one was left. But it doesn't mean that that's truly the end.
Which I don't think is a bad idea. I think there's a logic in sort of creating separate Dalek factions. And I'm surprised the show hasn't done this more, which have their own personality. And these don't really yet, but you could do that. And so you have, like, when the Daleks come back, you have different agendas and different personalities and maybe certain different traits. So it's not just the Daleks coming back. It's a certain type of Daleks, which could be a little more interesting because you're creating difference. And it's not just an aesthetic thing. There is a specific reason why these Daleks would be back with specific agendas. I also have to say, I still like the idea of having the Daleks out the shell more. Not all the time, but I think, certainly as a kid, that must be quite creepy. And it gives them another edge, just another tool to the toolbox. So it's not just, you know, tanks. There can be something a little more insidious there occasionally too. I don't want it overused, but I think it just adds a little more to the mythos. So you're doing something different again.
Let's have a look at some figures. The episode in the UK gathered 4.6 million viewers on the overnight figures. And an audience appreciation index score of 79. Now, that might not be reflective of the episode itself, but the quality of the surrounding programming. We will wait and see how the figures turn out. But I would imagine it'll probably drop in at over 6 million, given that it's 4.69 on the overnight. So that's quite good. We have some comments on Facebook from our followers. Hello, people. Thank you for your contributions. Alex Tai says that it heavily borrowed from Blood of the Daleks. Is that a big finish?
It is, yes. I guess it did. Blood of the Daleks basically, there was a scientist character that kind of, I guess, recreated its own kind of Daleks on another planet, but also used another scientist's body to do it. But it was basically this one scientist died, put his consciousness in this woman's body to kind of carry on his work that he wasn't allowed to do. I know that story pretty well, but I guess I'm not seeing the links that that person is coming to. Okay. They could very well be right. But yeah, I suppose it's got hints of that.
Okay. Greg Bartlam, it was pretty good, very atmospheric. The resolution was far too quick, but the end emotional. Lewis David Blaney found it slightly underwhelming. Felt like Praxis meets Victory of the Daleks and ends with Army of Ghosts Doomsday. We'll come to the ending in a bit. Daniel Edwards, least worst ep of the Chibnall era bar Spyfall. Katie Paul, nothing here that held my interest or suspended my disbelief. It wasn't dreadful, but that was presumably by virtue of the fact that everything here felt recycled or horribly predictable. There's a lot more from Katie there, so check that out on Facebook. If you're not following us already, do so to join in the calls for your thoughts. Katie also says, for me personally, Jodie's Doctor has run her course. Jonathan Roberts liked a lot of the elements of the story and how it linked with the last New Year's special. However, the prison scenes were a little long. John Bishop as a new companion should be interesting. And Nicole Field didn't manage to watch it through, but had to pause and resume a couple of times. He wasn't overwhelmed, but he's pretty much enjoyed it. I think it's generally the feeling, isn't it? It's generally enjoyed. He's got a good AI score, and it's done well in the ratings. It could have gone on Christmas Day, to be honest.
I think she cemented her Doctor now as well. I felt she seems far more comfortable.
Yeah.
As the Doctor than she did initially, which is good that she's got that flow. I thought the end for the companions was a bit of felt a little wet. I could see what they were trying to do and what the point that Chibnall was trying to make, especially in a new series where, as people have said, you know, the Doctor and the companions tend to split because of some sort of tragedy or there's a reason behind it. We don't tend to have them just sort of saying, I'm done. Yeah. I've had enough. But it still just kind of felt dramatically a bit disappointing. didn't really, I don't know, it felt also a little engineered with the 10 months. But dramatically, I just didn't really get anything out of it, I suppose. I don't know.
Well, I think in my, you know, I'm sorry, James. I didn't cut you off there, but no, it's I think the sad thing is here, and I hate to keep like harping on this, but like if it was a character that we were emotionally connected to, maybe that scene would have worked. And I imagine that there are some people that really like Ryan, you know, and I liked Graham, but I felt that Graham was just kind of making the right call. My grandson's leaving. I'm not going to go whizz off around the galaxy, but Ryan, there was no emotional connection because I found very little of that character to be interesting or relatable for the most part. I just didn't feel that there was much effort put into that character. And I hate to say that, I don't mean to be rude to the actor or anything, but you know, it was almost, you know, when Adric left, you know, you could almost hear the audience applause, you know, which is sad to say because they didn't like the character on the whole. And obviously he had his followings. But when Ryan left, you could almost just hear the crickets, in my opinion. And I think that's what it was. There was this long drawn out goodbye that should have kind of more so been reserved for a character that was, you know, a beloved character of the show. And I hate to say it that way because, I don't mean to come off rude with it, but it just kind of felt like, okay, yeah, you're leaving, cool. Like, all right. You know, because one of two things needed to happen. You either needed to get a character that we could have enjoyed, you know, so step up the writing, step up the acting, or it's time to leave.
I think my issue is a little less hard as yours. I think, I mean, I liked Ryan. I had no issues with Ryan, but I do agree. I don't think he was quite a passive character in a lot of ways. So I think for me, the problem was that they never gave me, a bit like with Mel leaving in Dragonfire, they never gave me a real feeling of why he was leaving. Mm. Because we don't see in that episode any of their life as it is now. We have them meet Yaz in the other TARDIS and have a conversation. But I never got a feeling of what he wanted because it was never really given to me. Because the only thing we really ever saw, we saw one of his friends and we've seen Graham. And Graham's on the TARDIS with him. So it didn't really give me a feeling of why he wanted to stay.
Well, I think there's something to do with his dad, wasn't there? Who we've also seen.
Yeah, but, okay, no, that's yeah. true.
Fair but enough. it is flimsy. It is lightweight.
Well, also, in fairness, though, the one friend that we saw did legitimately have an issue that, social issue and so on, that Ryan... Well, two friends. We saw two friends, unless it's the same guy, and I'm just confusing the matter. But, like, you know, he was basically just letting him know, we haven't seen you in months, which it's got to be a good feeling to know that people want you around kind of thing, but also having his actual issue that was going on that Ryan was like, you know, I wasn't there for him. So... I do feel that there was like a legitimate backing that we at least understood and saw, but maybe it wasn't quite as much. Like you said, in those 10 months, we probably should have seen a bit more all their lives, really.
I suppose my argument would be we don't need the 10 months then, because we, agreed. As you say, and I agree with you, yes, looking back, yeah, I'm wrong. There have been pockets of things where they've tried to show that Ryan was having tensions with, why without being away, so why you don't, I just don't know. I kind of feel a bit like Brian that scene could have been shorter without it being less impactful. And sometimes I think it's easier for writers to overwrite, and you could have had less and it could have spoke more and probably more poignantly with less being said, and I think that would have carried a bit more. I don't know, it did feel like it was speaking too much and not giving enough in a weird way. And I, as I say, I'm not as, I like Ryan. I've met people like Ryan and he feels quite real to me. He's not particularly got much, he doesn't give me much agency in the show. He doesn't do, I don't know. He seems quite passive in a lot of ways, but he feels quite real to me. And I prefer him and Graham to Yaz, unfortunately. Who Yaz to me just feels like a character that's been rewritten from the DNA of Clara and Rose, and
she's more mental Rose, isn't she?
Yeah,
there is a slight kind of concern over her kind of obsessiveness with regards to the Doctor.
And... I tend to feel the Doctor's always got it wrong. You know, the Doctor sort of has these criteria of people who should be on the TARDIS and when they shouldn't. And I kind of feel anyone who says, I want to go with you, almost is should be shouldn't.
Yeah, yeah.
Because they're getting some sort of personal pleasure out of other people's pains and tragedies, which is generally what you seem to see on these adventures. And it's kind of like that sort of thing is, you know, the person who wants to be the leader perhaps shouldn't be the leader. And the companion who wants to be the companion perhaps shouldn't be the companion. And yeah, I don't know. She's just, I mean, the acting is fine. I think it's a convincing role. Everything's put into the character and that's great. But I just feel the character and the way that she is written is just, I find it lacks charm. It feels too by the book. Yeah. And I think that's a shame. And out of the three, I'd have wished she had gone and the other two had stayed, frankly. But
Well, we've talked about it before where, like I said, you know, she's supposed to be the smart one of the group because she's the police officer and so on. But she made so many decisions that were like, OK, I can teleport to the space station without knowing what the atmosphere is like up there. Awesome. Let me just go do that and not tell the doctor who I have a direct line of communication with. That said, since she is the one that's staying, I think I personally would have preferred if it was just Yaz and the doctor for a little bit rather than bringing in Dan, the new character, because I would have liked to, I think some of the issues, some of the criticism that a lot of us were feeling wasn't quite so much, you know, and I want to say this too, because I do feel like I was unduly harsh to Ryan's character. There were moments where I did really like Ryan's character, but they were few and far between. And that's why I don't feel anything for him leaving, is because they didn't use those moments more often, or that character more often, kind of thing. So I don't feel anything for him leaving, because it was just kind of like, all right, well, you know, if I get one out of five episodes where I actually like you, what's the point?
He didn't make his mark, did he? That's the problem.
No. There you go. Fairness. And Yaz, similarly, where I kind of feel Yaz is almost in that Clara vein, like she's Rose with the obsessiveness, but Clara a little bit more so, where per episode, I just kind of feel like they're just making her do what they need somebody to do per episode rather than sticking with a true character type. But I feel that if we remove Ryan and Graham, you can focus the character potential on one person. You can put more weight on their shoulders, more character development on their shoulders, rather than share it between another companion that has to be there as well. And I think I would have just liked to have seen it, because while I do like the dynamic between the Doctor and two companions, because obviously, you know, one of my favorite dream teams is still the Doctor, Harry, and Sarah. You know, I think that's a great dynamic that worked very well. And I think you can get that. Certainly you have Jamie and Zoe, or Jamie and Victoria. And I think that dynamic works great. I also think that there's something to be said for the Doctor and Sarah, or the Doctor and Rose, that worked extremely well, that you don't need that other person, or at least you don't need them straight away. You know, it would be nice to see Yaz and the Doctor, like if this Dan guy comes in literally in the first episode of series 13, I think you took away some potential for Yaz's character to grow.
But I think Yaz's problem is that, again, she's built from the same building blocks as all those other ones, as we've said before, you know, that she is the dissatisfied youth where life isn't giving her what she wants, and she feels underutilized, underappreciated, and normal life is just too boring for her, and she needs to do something bigger. And then the world comes apart with the Doctor, and she gets this lust for a world which is, you know, that completes her. And I kind of really loathe that model. I think it's a real bad model to sell people as well, that you are too big for life and that is why life isn't giving you what it wants. It's a very aggressive consumerist model, isn't it? That, you know, why is life not giving me what I want? I'm worth more than this. It's like, well, maybe you just need to be working in life in a better way, or in a different way. Maybe life doesn't owe you anything. And I think that is my issue with her. And that's because there's no real true honest agency in the character. It makes it very hard for the writers and the actress to actually give you something genuine. While, you know, Bradley Walsh's Graham, you know, was a cancer survivor who, you know, was looking to try and widow. Men can be widows, can't they?
Widower.
Of course.
I'm not sure.
I think it's a widower. But, it's a widower.
Yes. And, and need was looking for something more out of life and that sort of stuff. And that made more sense. Ryan, again, being quite passive, not quite sure where he was. I suppose he had nothing in life. I suppose that was his point. He not really found any potential or any goal in life. I suppose that was his position.
I think the true tragedy with Ryan is that they set him up with this condition. Yeah. And they didn't really kind of, and I understand that, like, it's a real thing people suffer with and try to overcome and so on. And it's very difficult to say in order to overcome it, you have to go to alien worlds and battle aliens and so on. But it would have been interesting to find the social aspects of these alien worlds, that the moments that you would still find in real life here on Earth, that maybe more so the friends around him gave him the confidence to kind of take the steps to try and confront it. Even if, like in the end of this episode, he just keeps falling off the bike because it's not that easy for someone with his condition to continue to actually literally ride the bike, at least to have found the confidence to say, I'm going to press forward. I'm going to try and do these things. I may fall off the bike for the rest of my damn life, but I'm going to keep trying. I think that would have been more interesting to see. And I think for some reason with his character, they just kept falling flat on that. They would remember that he had this condition when they needed it for a moment, but it would have been more interesting for him to grow and find the strength to carry on. Because that sounds like, that feels like that was very much supposed to be his character development of, you know, there's not really much going on in life. I can't do much anyway, and because I'm stunted, you know, my grandmother wants me to do these things, but I can't, you know, but it sounds like he just needed to find the confidence, almost like these three characters in a way were supposed to be the Cowardly Lion, the Scarecrow, and the Tin Man, you know, and they just weren't used to that potential.
Well, it's weird because the dyspraxia sort of in the first season there was a couple of mentions to it, then it disappears, and it's almost like it's like he struggles with it. Then he doesn't struggle with it when he's off Earth, and then it bookends with him struggling with it again, and it was kind of like, I don't think that's the best way to deal with conditions which people struggle with. It's almost like someone who's wheelchair bound getting on the TARDIS, no longer being wheelchair bound really that much. And then you wouldn't do that. You'd have to work with that within the story because it's very, but because it's very visible to the writers, it wouldn't be ignored. But a condition which is not visible in that sort of sense gets lost. And I think that's the shame. I think it was a good idea to bring on a character which is struggling with something in their life, which is, you know, very tangible like that. But then to sort of forget about it and not use it within that, I don't want to say disrespects it, but I really feel that, yeah, I think Ryan lost his way. Not that he should have been, that shouldn't have been his identity, because that would have been wrong as well. But it kind of surprised me, because as soon as you create limitations for characters, surely that creates drama. And it's the same for all characters. If you have, and it's a weird how drama forgets it. It's weird how, you know, Indiana Jones gets to his fourth film and forgets that he's old. And it's like, that's where the drama is. That's where the tension is, surely. Why are we forgetting these sort of things? And that, I think, yeah, you're right. I think it's a shame that while that shouldn't have been what identified him, it had given them something to, when you've got, as you say, a setup where you don't have as much space for characterization as you would normally because you've got four, it would give you a space for writers to sort of remember what that character's about and what his challenges are, and they lost those, and I think that's a shame for Ryan.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
The resolution to the revolution involved a spare TARDIS.
Yep.
And tricking the Daleks to fly into it. I felt that was a nice piece of trickery by the Doctor. It's there's a certain whininess to the Doctor in this episode that she doesn't normally have. I found it to be a satisfactory fix rather than just relying on something at the last minute or discover, you know, the old obviously it's Daleks because you can't do it this way, but the problem that appeared a couple of times in her first run of, oh no, they're just misunderstood aliens, that kind of, you know, all that thing, the little ting pain in the backside. I thought this was a satisfying resolution to having an army of Death Squad Daleks.
Yeah,
I thought that worked rather well myself.
The one thing I didn't like, just as a personal thing, and the new series has done it a couple of times, and I wish it didn't, is the Jack hiding visibly behind a corner of in a Dalek stronghold, and Daleks just going past him. I kind of felt, and they did this in Daleks Take Manhattan, and I kind of feel, especially new series Daleks are far brighter than that. Maybe you've got to imagine he can sort of hide his own signature somehow. I don't know. Being dead, maybe he doesn't quite exist in the same way. But I
Maybe
sometimes feel
John
that.
got a Dalek doing in his armor. He could have been what he could have been on YouTube or anything.
Well, I mean, it's just like Ben Graham and Ryan sort of running around a Dalek ship, putting charges down, and Daleks not being aware. I think you've got to be careful you don't start making trivializing your enemy that you're already, by the nature of drama, trivializing every time that they lose because you take a little bit of
Oh.
their strength away. So to have them sort of just being able to sort of funk around their Dalek source and the Daleks not notice, you wouldn't have Daleks being able to do that around the Doctor's TARDIS. So, come on.
So speaking of trivializing, and what we talked about earlier with some of the bad dialogue, one of the absolute worst things that I hated so much was when Jack was telling them that, he's going to catch up with Gwen, and Gwen's got this great story about how she just defeated a Dalek with a scooter and a basketball or whatever it was. And it was like, now that is completely undermining a villain that is supposed to be one of the, one Dalek could wipe out an entire planet. Unless you've got a scooter and a basketball or whatever the freaking line of dialogue was, whatever it was, when I heard that, I was like, these are the things that, and in fairness to Chibnall here, these are the things that would go back to the Russell T. Davis era. When he would write in that kind of silliness where it's like, look, I know the show is silly, but like, let's not be absurd. We have to keep things in on a realistic basis here. Fine, Gwen was a good character, and I understand you want us to think that she's ultra amazing. Well, make her have some kind of weapon that Torchwood has that she took out of Dalek rather than her nephew's scooter and basketball. Like it, I just couldn't believe that line. Like it was like out of all the things that were in there, that was utterly unnecessary. And
What
it
about the
certainly
phone call?
undermined the characters.
What about that phone call, though?
Jax?
Yeah, because it just felt like, whoa, hello. Why are we making phone calls here? Why isn't it?
Yeah. Why isn't he there?
Where are you, Jack?
Yeah, no, I agree.
Yeah, I it was kind of interesting how, and you mentioned this earlier, Brian, how they were sort of very sort. Well, I think what Christian did, one of you two, you're both the same. The Jack, there's so much of Jack's history and his continuity, which at the moment is kept very, very vague. How he relates to the Torchwood and Torchwood Big Finish, or Torchwood America, all these sort of things are now very much in the extended ethos, and the show doesn't comment on that anymore. And yes, it's kind of. And then it puts itself in a position here. It's like, yeah, this little conversation with Gwen. It's just, I don't know. Yeah, I know they wanted to make
Well,
it colourful to make it stand out because it was meant to be a bit of a light moment. But again, it's that thing that these light moments do end up trivialising your main enemy, which a show like this has to spend so much energy in trying to keep them tough and deadly and scary, despite them being constantly defeated, and that's hard. So I think you've got to be careful you don't make it harder for yourself by making to the audience these things are things that, yeah, that human beings with a bit of nuance, a bit of nounce, can just, defeat. And it shouldn't be like that. It should be basically, yeah, she managed to survive.
right.
And that, and it should be a kudos on that. Well done. They've
Yeah.
got guns, they come in mass, they don't care. You've got very little chance of surviving. If you survive, you're probably something beyond the average human. That's enough.
Right. And speaking of Jack and his character and so on, like we were talking about, you've got the story setup that we never really learned more about, which was the year of Jack's life that was stolen from him, that he's out there in the universe
Yes.
doing what he's doing because he wants to find that one year. And we now bring him back yet again, where the doctor is now living Jack's story. A portion of the doctor's life may have been stolen, and she's got to figure that out. You have the perfect chance to finally start telling us a little bit about Jack's missing year. That you can parallel it to what the doctor is going through. And instead, you just go, hey, remember that time that Jack had missed a year and he wanted to know more about it? What if we do that to the doctor instead and just forget about Jack? And it's like, okay. But it's hilarious. It's just that they've already done it and ignored it. Are we going to do that again with the doctor? Ignore that year, or are they going to go in depth with it? Could we maybe see Jack come back? Could the two stories parallel each other? I don't know, but I just found it kind of annoying that you know, here she is talking about the very thing that was his driving force when we first met him.
Yeah, I suppose again, it was an episode which was like delving into Doctor Who continuity, but trying very hard not to. So it was trying to stand very much on its own. So, you know, Jack's there, you have a mention of Gwen, you have a mention of his time with the Doctor, you have these throwaway references, but it is all very throwaway. There's nothing really meaty there. The most meaty you get is him acknowledging that he got separated from the Doctor and it was hard. And that's about as much as it will delve into its continuity to keep it straightforward and accessible, I think, is probably the idea. But yeah, it does kind of feel like it misses a few swings. Just feel a bit odd because they're not swung.
But they didn't really need to mention Rose being in another reality or even mention Rose by name.
Yeah, like,
we would have quite understood what they were talking about. And even if you don't understand what they're talking about, you get what they're talking about in concept if you don't know who Rose is, you know?
Apparently it set a few people up to thinking that Rose was going to become more important as well. So it creates an expectation and therefore a disappointment from your audience. Because there's a lot who are still very much engaged in Rose because that was their introduction to the series. You know, she's a massive part of their Doctor Who mythos. So I think you've got to be careful you don't set up things that you're just ultimately going to disappoint.
Yeah. Oh, design-wise, though, I want to talk about the interior of that Dalek ship because I thought some of that stuff was really cool, especially the computer graphics that were on the sphere on the ceiling and in the walls and so on. I liked how they tried to make it look like it came from the Russell T. Davis era, but they still did their own spin on it. Because obviously the ship, the exterior, was basically based around the Russell T. Davis Dalek ship, but the interior, I thought there was a lot in there that was very visually appealing. And also, a little bit shocked to see that they had them their own roundels in their ship.
Well, it was a time ship, wasn't it?
Mm. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Good point.
Which is interesting. Interesting. Yeah. Thought from the crew as well. This is a time Dalek ship. Would it have roundels? I noticed that myself, but I'll have to rewatch it for that.
Well, it could also, that, you know, now that you bring it up in that way, it could also be, you know, especially since they're from the Time War, it could have been kind of stolen technology, you know, appropriated technology, which kind of makes it a little bit more interesting now. But I did. I really liked that. And I kind of like, there's this tiny little thing that I don't know if it was intentional or if it was just how they designed them. But if you looked in the eye stalk of the bronze Daleks, there was this line that kind of just went from center, halfway center, you know, just straight up to the half point. And if every time they did a close up on one of the Daleks, you could see that line. It was in various points, you know, how like the Dalek eye socket would kind of focus kind of thing. And I don't know if that was just there because of how they made that particular all eye stalk for this series. And, you know, unfortunately, we made it. It has this line in there. Can't do much about it. Or if it was intentional. But I kind of thought it was neat. It's a nothing little detail. But I thought it was still kind of pretty cool to see it in there. And I don't know how to explain it. It seemed like a focal point, like it was intentional. I don't know. It was nice to see them again. I'm a big fan of the bronze Daleks. I always mention it. They are my favorites out of all of the designs. And like you, sure, I would not mind seeing classic Daleks again. The Daleks that were made in this episode by Robertson, they looked a lot better. I liked the lighting system on them. I think that, you know, like you said, if we see them again in some capacity as a conflicting Dalek race, I can see that being interesting. But I do have a soft spot for the bronze Daleks. I just really took to that design.
Yeah, I agree with that. It'd be interesting to see that design with a few. I mean, I suppose we have had it with a few colors in its in.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, no. Yeah, I think the bottom line is that we've spent a lot of time criticizing it, but overall, it felt very much within the Doctor Who mythos of, you know, 2005 onwards. Whether that's a problem, given there's now, as we've said before, so much quality content out there that it's having to compete with, is another question. But I sat down watched it on iPlayer, and I enjoyed that period. It was fine. Lots of things we can critique, but
yeah, well, I mean, we're always going to, you know, it's a podcast, you know, like you're always going to talk about the pluses and the negatives. You want to be honest about it and so on. But no, this is definitely a story that I felt was a stronger. I think it's one of the stronger stories of the Jodie and Chibnall era. And I would definitely watch this one again. I felt it had a lot going on for it that did work. Despite the things that didn't work, I felt the things that did work outweighed those things. And that's typically what you want. Like, you know, I could watch one of the best films I've ever seen, and I'm sure I would still find some nitpicks in there, because that's just what we do as people. We nitpick.
We don't nitpick. Brian, did you find it weird the way that they would put the dematerialization sound of the TARDIS before it would materialize? Not nitpicking at all.
Not at all. No.
That really threw me. I mean, they did switch it to the materialization, but it was a weird production choice. I mean, I know originally it did that in the early, very, very early ones, but not nitpicking at all.
No. So, marks out of 10, chaps? We still do that, don't we?
Well, I think so. I think it depends on what you're marking it for to a certain degree. If you're marking it for a nice bit of sort of BBC-toned New Year's Eve drama, or New Year's Day drama, sorry, I think it's a straight sort of like 8 out of 10. Okay. I think if you want to sort of analyze it within its potential or within Doctor Who, I'd probably give it a 7.
Yeah, I'd agree on those.
I can't really argue with those. I was going to lean more toward the 8, somewhere around there. I just felt like as a Dalek story, it was different because it wasn't a grand Dalek plot. I liked how it became kind of just what it was, you know, like one Dalek surviving, but it was still a kind of human necessity or kind of human greed kind of thing. And then we bring in I really like the concept of the Daleks that she brought in this story. And I felt that was something that, you know, like, again, they're harkening back to the early days of the Daleks with the whole Nazi kind of parallels. And I thought that was very interesting. These are Daleks who are specifically, it's a time ship, but they're specifically about the purity control of their race. And I thought that's, you know, you'd think they would all be about that as a Dalek, but I thought that was an interesting concept. But they were brought in by the Doctor rather than this being their own plot. So I don't know. I thought this story brought a lot of brought enough uniqueness to it as a Dalek story that it definitely deserves the 8.
I also quite like, I have to say, the way it subverted some of the Doctor Who conventions. Like, you have the instigator of the problem do the turncoat and betray the heroes as well, and side of the Daleks. It doesn't make a massive deal to the story. It doesn't make a massive deal to the Daleks particularly. And ultimately, he survives and benefits from it as well, which kind of feels like a conversation about today, how in today's world, it doesn't feel like the good guys always win and the bad guys always lose. And that becomes more and more visible, even though that's been the same throughout history. And that was kind of a nice tweak as well. I like that play. So I think you're right. I think there was a few fresh things it was doing here with Daleks, with its own story techniques, and which I think has to be commended, that it does kind of feel that, as much as I know a lot of people have issues with Chibnall, and I think some of them could be quite valid, depending on your perspective, I do feel there's always that attempt with Chris Chibnall to actually try and do something a little different with the show, and not just be clever, but just try and do something a little different. And sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't, but I really did feel it was there.
Yeah, fair enough. Okay, we'll wrap it up then. Continue to tell us your thoughts on this episode and listen out for, when I say this episode, I mean Revolution of the Daleks. But do listen out for future podcasts from us, and we'll also be showing some older ones that are being re-uploaded to the interwebs because they were missing. Interesting, isn't it? Until next time. From all of us, take care in 2021 and goodbye.
Goodbye. 'Quiet over this
part. Yeah, it's supposed to be.
Well, I just kind of feel I don't see why we should. it doesn't add anything to the episode. It starts and then it just sits back and then it gets its own little platform at the end. You think, well, you're not going to contribute. I don't see why you should get your solo spot.